Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
With a point, thinking about parables that Jesus told. Just another reminder, we had that this morning, but I want you to know that we have in all of our lobbies the calendars for this year, sort of our big events that are coming up in 2014. We've got a lot of things to be excited about and to be looking forward to as we plan out ministry efforts. And there are a lot of blank spaces on the calendar where through the year we'll plan specific dates. We just didn't have all that information in. But I hope you'll take what we have, and I hope you'll make some time in your schedule and plan some ways you can be involved. We also have our budget available for the year, and as always, we want you to have that, and the elders have expressed their willing to talk with you, answer any questions you might have, but that's always a good thing for us to know and be open about and be prayerful about as we think about this year. We're excited to have the Grahams with us as members of our church family. And we also want to continue to be looking as we see people who are visiting with us, who are guests with us. If you're a guest with us this evening, we want you to know you're important to us. And we want to get to know you and find out how we can encourage you. I also want to say, I neglected to say this morning about our banners that we have up on either side looking at our theme for the year, that Chris Webb does an awesome job putting these graphics together. I wish I could put together logos like this, but he does a great job with that, and so we're thankful for him and for all that he does, and we want to continue to be mindful of our youth group as well. They've already had an active schedule. Last night, there was the young versus the old battle, and I don't want to ruin the surprise for you, but the old folks won. And so that's the streak has begun now, so we're going to begin. I think the youth group is beginning training every week, you know, so they can get ready for next year's battle. But it's just exciting to have times like that where we can have fun, get to know each other, and we're thankful for all that they do. One of the things we mentioned this morning in the Ephesians 1 passage we studied was the idea of the eyes of our hearts being enlightened or opened. And as I thought about that passage this week, I was reminded of this song. I believe we've sung it a couple of times, but if you're not as familiar with it, we'll sing it through once, and then there's kind of an echo part that goes along with it. But it's that same idea of what Paul was saying to the church at Ephesus, that he wanted the eyes of their heart to be enlightened, to be opened. So if you know it, let's sing out together.
Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. To see you high and lifted up, shining in the light of your glory. Pour out your power and love as we sing, holy, holy, holy. Holy, holy, holy. Holy, holy, holy. Holy, holy, holy. I want to see you.
All right, if you look at just this next part that we have on the screen here, you'll see that the next part of the song, you have the ladies singing, "Open the eyes of my heart," and the men singing the "Holy, holy, holy" part. And so we'll sing this through all the way again together. And once we get to this point, we'll have the men and the women do the different parts. And if you get confused, just pick a part and go with it, because it's a beautiful song as we sing it together. So let's start at the beginning, and we'll sing this and reflect on the message of that together.
Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. And I want to see you. To see you high and lifted up, shining in the light of your glory. Pour out your power and love as we sing, Holy, Holy, Holy. Holy, Holy, Holy. Holy, Holy, Holy. Holy, Holy, Holy. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you.
It was getting late, and Craig was already tired. Driving 10 hours will do that to you. His eyelids were getting heavy, and he knew he should have left earlier. He was at home visiting from college over break, and he had spent the holidays with his family, and it was time to get back. He meant to leave right after breakfast, but he stuck around and talked for a while, and that put him getting into campus pretty late. He knew he was getting tired. He'd been staying up and having fun with his family all through break, and so he was a little worn out. He didn't have any classes in the morning, so he decided the best thing to do would be just to stop at a little hotel on the side of the road and spend the night and then get up early in the morning and head into class. He pulled up his GPS and he typed in what is the operative word for any college student looking for a place to stay, what is the cheapest hotel. And so as he pulled off the interstate, he drove by some that were right off the interstate exit because there was one that promised to be a lot less expensive down the road. Because it was nighttime, he didn't really notice the boards in the windows of a lot of the businesses he drove past. If it had been daylight, he probably could have seen this was not the best part of town. And it definitely was not the nicest motel he'd ever seen. The first step he took into the little lobby, he could just sort of feel the dust in the air. And he wondered when the last time was it had been cleaned. The hotel clerk was in the office watching a sitcom that was blaring very loudly. And so when he finally got her attention, she came out to the desk, checked in, gave him a key, and he went to the parking lot to get his stuff for the night. He didn't think it was going to be a very clean room, but it wasn't going to be very long. He'd need it, just a few hours, then he'd hit the road. Before he saw anything or before he heard anything, he felt the baseball bat to the back of his head. And as he landed on the ground, he was trying to figure out what happened. And he looked up and saw two individuals that were standing over him. They asked him for his money and everything else that he had. He gave them his wallet, he gave them his phone, but they didn't stop hitting him with the bat. Even though he wasn't fighting back, he could tell they were just having fun. They took the jacket off of him that he'd gotten for Christmas, and not only that, but they found the keys in his jacket pocket. They tossed that in his car, they hopped in the passenger seat and the driver's seat and drove off with his car, with his computer, with some cash that he had been given for the holidays and that he was taking with him to school, with just about everything. And he was left there laying on the ground, and he tried to take stock of what was happening. He felt like he'd bruised, maybe even cracked a couple of ribs. He was bleeding. He tried to get up, but he couldn't, and so he just laid there until he could work up the energy. He could still hear the sitcom bleeding through the walls of the hotel office, and so he knew there was no hope of this clerk hearing him if he called for help. And as he was laying there, he could see across the street, and there was a building. And when he squinted and focused on it, it wasn't just any building, it was a church building. And even though it was late at night, There was a light on inside, and someone was walking through the door and locking it. This was a man who had keys to the church building. He wondered if he might be the minister at that church building. He thought, well, surely he'll see me and he'll come over here. Maybe he could call the police or better yet, an ambulance. And as that man turned around, they made eye contact. He knew he saw him. And he thought, now I'm going to get some help. But instead of walking across the street, that man turned away, got in his car, and sped off. It was at that point Craig began to feel very sleepy and his eyes closed. He didn't know how much later it was when his eyes opened, but they opened because he heard some kind of car that was coming on the street right by the parking lot. He looked up and saw that it was a van, and it had the name of a church on the side of it. He could even see the driver in the driver's side, stopped at a red light, waiting for the light to turn green. He thought, this is great. Maybe he can take me to a hospital, take me to the emergency room or something. The man made eye contact with him, and then when the light turned green, the van was gone. Craig closed his eyes again. The next time his eyes opened, he was in the back of a car that didn't smell very good, and there was trash seemingly everywhere. As he tried to take stock of what had happened, he noticed that there were some old T-shirts that evidently had been used to bind up some of the wounds that he had. The bleeding had stopped. And as he looked in front, he could see the driver, and he could tell just by the outline of the driver's frame, this was a large, intimidating man. In fact, when he looked in the rearview mirror and he saw the face of the driver, this wasn't the face of someone that Craig would usually think was here to help. There were tattoos all over his face, more piercings than he'd seen on one person at one time before, and he was trying to figure out what's happening next. I mean, if he had seen this guy in a parking lot, he would have been more scared of him than the other two. Then he began to wonder where he was taking him. He didn't have to wonder for long as they pulled in the bay of an emergency room, and the man, without saying a word, carried him inside, found a nurse that would take care of him. And as you know, it's busy in an emergency room. It took all night before they could get him in a room, get him settled up, get everything taken care of. Craig had been up all night. He was tired. And even though he didn't know much about the stranger, he could see through his doorway of the room where he was staying, him talking to one of the workers at the hospital. And he heard him say that he had to go, but he wanted that worker to know that all of his medical bills were going to be paid for. He left his information. And then he walked off. And as Craig was trying to figure out why this man would do this, he realized he'd been up all night. He felt sleepy. And he closed his eyes. You could probably tell that that's sort of a modern day version of a parable Jesus tells here in Luke chapter 10, the Good Samaritan. I don't say that in order to try to improve on the parable Jesus tells. We can't improve on it. But I want us to maybe look at it from a different angle, maybe a fresh perspective. Have you ever had someone tell you a joke and you already knew the punchline? And half of the fun of hearing a joke is knowing the surprise with the punchline, but if you already know what's coming, it doesn't have quite the same effect. And when we get to a familiar parable like this one, if we know what's coming, we might miss some of the details that could really drive a point home. And so as we've been going through this series, thinking about the stories Jesus tells, we're reminding ourselves that Jesus is not like us in the sense that the stories that are recorded in Scripture aren't just stories to be passing the time. They're stories that have a specific purpose, a specific intent. And they're meant to teach something. And so as we think through a story similar to the one we just heard, and don't grade me too harshly, I haven't written a lot of parables before. But as we think through that kind of story, we have to ask ourselves, what would we hear if we were part of that original audience which Jesus is telling this story? We need to know the context. Jesus as a teacher is not just telling a story in a vacuum. He's illustrating a point. And what happens as Jesus begins is a lawyer comes up to him in verse 25 of Luke chapter 10. And he stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." At this point, the lawyer and Jesus are on very familiar ground. Obviously, when we think back to the greatest command, as Matthew would record it, when we think about loving the Lord with all of our being, that's something you see all the way back in the book of Deuteronomy. The Shema was something that all those who knew the law of Moses would have been very familiar with. The idea of loving your neighbor as yourself is seen in the book of Leviticus and in other places in the Old Testament. And so this is very familiar territory. The lawyer asks Jesus a question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus responds with a question, as he often does. And the lawyer responds with a familiar statement from Scripture. And then everything seems to be okay. But the next verse is interesting. Verse 29, but he, desiring to justify himself, literally there to make himself righteous, sort of to make himself seem righteous in the sight of everyone who is listening, he said, and who is my neighbor? Now that was a live debate in the time of Jesus. We can't really say that all Jewish rabbis taught this or thought this because we see different sources from that time period. But there was a lot of debate as to who really qualified as a neighbor. Who do you really take care of? Who do you have responsibility to? Who are you obligated to deal well with? And there were different lines of thinking. There were several Jewish rabbis that would have thought, well, you're good to your neighbor, but you don't have any responsibility towards your enemies. And so he's asking Jesus this question, and there's a lot to it. And here's how Jesus responds. He says, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus told him, you go and do likewise. Now, as we think through this parable, we're going to do what we did last week, and that is just examine each one of the characters and see what we can learn from each one's perspective. Jesus grounds this parable in a reality. He was going from Jerusalem down into Jericho. This is a road that we see even in history. The historian Josephus refers to this road. People would have known about it. People would have known that it was dangerous. It was a treacherous road. It was very common for bandits and for robbers to be lying in wait for someone who was making that journey. And so as Jesus tells this story, it's something that could easily happen. And we begin by thinking with the ones who didn't help. A man falls among robbers, they strip him, beat him, and depart, leaving him half dead. In other words, it probably looked like this individual was a goner. It probably looked like things were already over for him. And so then you have 2 individuals, a priest and a Levite, who walk by and they did not help. Seems to me, if we're looking through their perspective, Jesus is sending us a clear message that we don't need to ignore our neighbors. Remember, that's the point of this parable, is who is our neighbor? They were ignoring someone who they should have treated as a neighbor. And a priest and a Levite would have been, for many of the Jews there, the heroes of a story. They had probably heard a lot of stories where priests and Levites were heroes. They were individuals that were in a very real way in a class above the average ordinary Israelite. And so it would have been somewhat shocking for them to be going down the road and just not decide to help. It's interesting to read different reasons why a priest and a Levite might not want to stop and help someone who was dead or looked dead on the side of the road. It may have been that they were afraid of touching a dead body. Remember, in Jewish law, that would have made them unclean. And so instead of getting closer to and inspecting to see whether he was really dead, they might not have wanted to chance it. What's interesting, though, is that both the priest and the Levite were not going from Jericho to Jerusalem. The text says, as Jesus describes it, the man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. In other words, it seems that the priest and the Levite weren't in a hurry to get to the temple to perform whatever service they needed to perform. It seems like that was already done. They were likely in a hurry to get home. They were in a hurry to get back, and they decide not to help. What I think is really fascinating about this entire parable is that the priest and the Levite are never specifically given a motive. Last week when we talked about the parable of the talents, we knew the motive, or at least the motive the servant who buried his talent gave. He He was afraid of the master. He had a fear. We don't get a motive for the priest and the Levite. And I think that's worth noting. I think maybe it's important to us to see that the message of the parable is just that they didn't help. For whatever reason, they didn't help. You know, it's easy for us to justify our actions and to try to rationalize our actions. Maybe find some reasons we could get out of being obligated to do something. But that's not what happens here. They just simply didn't help. Whatever the reason was, isn't that important. What's important is they walked by as if they didn't even see the person there. They saw him and they kept going. We don't ignore our neighbors. And I wonder sometimes how easy it might be for us to ignore very real needs. Now remember, this is not just a small thing, a basic need that's present here. This is a near-death experience. This is someone who is at the point of death. This is serious business. And a lot of times we associate being a good Samaritan with a little act that's helpful, and those are good. Those small acts of kindness are good, but this parable is talking about a serious issue. They are walking by someone in serious need. And yet, for whatever reason, they decide not to do anything about it. You may be familiar with a principle in psychology that's sometimes called the bystander effect. Or the fancier term is the diffusion of responsibility. In other words, if there's a need that's present and there are a lot of people around, we tend to think that someone else will take care of that. You know, someone should really do something about this. Someone should handle this. We saw that a few years ago when some of the reports were out of New York that in a Black Friday sale, that someone was actually trampled by the crowd. It wasn't that people didn't see a person being trampled. It was just everyone assumed someone else was going to help that person. A few years ago, there was a study that was done as part of a program by NBC where they had a child and an adult that were actors, paid actors, to stand in the middle of New York and to simulate the adult trying to take the child away from her family. And so the child is screaming out, "Help me, this man is not my father, help me, help me." And people are walking by. Do you know that went on for hours before someone even stopped and went over to see what was wrong and to see the situation? They tried that for hours before they finally got a reaction. There's something about the ease we have when there are a lot of people around us to look at something and to say, well, someone else will take care of that. Someone else can handle that. Whatever I've got on my mind, wherever I'm going, whatever I'm doing is much more important. And again, this is not necessarily a guilt trip about doing more small things. That's important too, but these are serious issues. Are there serious issues I'm overlooking? Are there certain people that I'm not looking at, that I'm ignoring? And so I have to think of that. How am I treating my neighbors? The ones who did not help remind us we don't ignore our neighbors. And then the one who does help reminds us that we don't shortchange our neighbors. And I can't think of a better word than this one. And I may probably, as usual, will think of one in like 2 weeks that would have been perfect, but it'll be too late and everybody will have forgotten about it. But this is what we're going to use for tonight. The idea of not just trying to do a little bit or give someone back less than what they really deserve. When it comes to compassion, compassion is poured out. It's that extra mile kind of service Jesus talks about. And so when a Samaritan comes on the scene, he pours out compassion. That's the difference between the way the Samaritan looks at him and the priest and the Levite, because the Samaritan has compassion. And I probably don't have to tell you about the bad blood between Jews and Samaritans. If we're reading through thinking about the roots of that in the Old Testament, in 2 Kings 17, we read that the Samaritans were part of a people that resulted when Jews had intermarried with the Syrians. And for a people that took their heritage and their bloodline very seriously, we can understand why the Jews would look at Samaritans a certain way. And it wasn't just a one-sided relationship. There were stories that were told. If you were growing up in Jewish households, you may have heard stories about times that Samaritans would have taken some bones of dead animals and placed them in the temple and would have rendered the temple unclean. That's something we see passed down through history. We don't know whether it's true or not. We just know it was told. It's those kinds of stories that fueled the fire and the speculation. The Samaritans had a different place of worship. They believed in the first five books we think of in the Old Testament, what we sometimes think of as the Torah, but they didn't believe everything that the Jews believed, and so there was a conflict there. And it's interesting to see what scholars have noted over the years, is that even in Jesus' day, stories like this had a certain rhythm to them. Have you ever watched a TV show and you've noticed if they show a replay, sometimes they'll do it three times? You kind of see it from one angle, then another angle, and then a third. Or sometimes in comedies, you might see the punchline comes in the third time. There's this, and then there's this, and then there's the punchline. You sort of see that happening the third time. Well, there was something similar in Jesus' day. If you were telling a story, it's very likely that they would have heard about the priest and the Levite, and they expected the third person to be the hero. After the priest and the Levite didn't do anything, Jesus' listeners were probably waiting for the hero. And they may have thought, maybe the hero in this story is just going to be an ordinary Israelite. Maybe he's just going to be an ordinary Jew that comes down the road, and he's not a priest or a Levite, but he's just an ordinary guy, and he shows compassion. And so when Jesus says a Samaritan came down the road, I think probably even before he described what the Samaritan did, people started to realize he's going to be the hero of this story. I would imagine, if not an audible gasp inside, they were thinking, I can't believe he's making the Samaritan the hero here. That's exactly what happens. What the Samaritan does using oil and wine would have been consistent with taking care of medical needs at the time and sterilizing the wound and making him feel better. Not only that, but maybe the most interesting aspect of the Samaritan's part in this parable is what happens in verse 35. He takes him on his own animal, brings him to an inn and takes care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii. Not only did he take care of him, he was with him overnight to make sure that he was okay. The next day, he leaves with the innkeeper, and he says, here's some money for what you've got so far. Anything else you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Historians also tell us that innkeepers were not viewed as necessarily the most honest people in the ancient world. Sometimes they could take advantage of those travelers who needed a place to stay and overcharge them. So the Samaritan not only is risking his own life by stopping on a dangerous road, helping someone who's ill, giving him what he needs, taking him to a hotel and paying for him, staying the night, he's even going to pay any other expenses. It's really a lavish kind of compassion. He wasn't looking for just the bare minimum he could do to get credit for doing a good deed. And it's important for us to understand, especially in a world where we think of good Samaritan, and we automatically think of someone who does a good deed. If you look that up in the dictionary, good Samaritan, one of the definitions will be someone who does something good. Even organizations like Samaritan's Purse are doing charitable work for others with the name of the Samaritan there, but that's not what it would have meant to Jesus' listeners. It would have been someone they wouldn't have wanted to associate with. And he's going to be the hero of this story? It leads us to the idea of the viewpoint of the one who was helped. We don't choose our neighbors. Now, I understand when we're moving into a neighborhood, we choose who we're going to live around. We choose what kind of neighborhood we're going to live in. We choose the friends we're going to have. We choose the people we're going to allow to affect our everyday lives. I understand all of that. But we don't choose our neighbors. The reason is, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. And if I read through the Sermon on the Mount, I also find out he wants me to love my enemies. He wants me to pray for those who persecute you. He would tell them that when a soldier wants to go with you 1 mile, you walk that extra mile, that you turn the other cheek. All of a sudden, I have to treat everyone with love. That means everyone is my neighbor. That means the Samaritan in this story was the neighbor of a man who might not even have wanted to associate with him. Now, we need to think very carefully about our own lives. We don't get to choose who we treat with love. You ever thought about that? We don't get to make that decision. God has already made it for us. When I become a Christian, when I put on the name of Christ, the decision has been made as to who I love. And I no longer have the right that I might think I have to judge someone based on their background. Based on where they're from, where they grew up, how much money they have, what their ethnic background might be, what their viewpoint on certain issues might be. I don't have the luxury of saying, well, I'm not going to care about that person. I'm not obligated to agree with everyone that I meet. I'm not obligated to say everyone that I know in life is making the right decision and the right choices. God wants us to make wise, discerning, and understanding choices as we go through life and to choose to follow the will of God. But I never have the right to treat someone unloving, in an unloving way. I never have that right. I don't get to make that choice. And so no matter what culture might tell me about how I should act towards other people, I'm not following culture. I'm reminding myself of what Jesus is saying here. And notice the response when he asks the question in verse 36. Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And it's almost as if the lawyer can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. He says, the one who showed him mercy. That was sort of it. Well, you know, the one that showed him mercy. Don't make me say it. Don't make me say it out loud. Because we've already got our cultural mindset on how we're supposed to treat these people, so don't make me say that the Samaritan was the one who did what was right. But it was true. The Samaritan risked his own life. The Samaritans believed in the first five books of the law of Moses that we think of, Genesis through Deuteronomy, and so they had the same worries about being unclean that the priest or the Levite would have. But he wasn't thinking about that. He didn't think about his own safety. He didn't think about what might happen to him or how much money he might lose due to this innkeeper. And so I have to ask myself, is there anyone in my life that I would consider in the category of Samaritan? I might not say it out loud. I probably wouldn't say it out loud. But just in our hearts, let's take just a minute tonight and ask ourselves, is there anyone that we've sort of justified in our hearts? Well, I don't really have to love someone like that. I don't really have to be concerned with the soul of someone who thinks this or does this or looks like this or comes from here or has this background or this opinion. I can sort of put them to the side. We're not given that option. Am I harboring negative feelings towards someone simply because of their background? Maybe something they've said in the past, and now I no longer feel like I have to love that person. Something they've done in the past, and now I no longer feel like I have to care about that person. Now, there's a difference between agreeing with what someone says in every situation and loving. I can love someone that I firmly disagree with, but I don't get to stop loving them. My disagreement with what they believe doesn't mean I stop believing. I need to love my neighbor, my enemy, and everyone in between. We don't get to choose our neighbors. We don't get to make judgments based on the way someone might look or someone might dress or someone might carry themselves. We're called to love. And not just love in theory. We don't ignore our neighbors. We don't shortchange them and just try to do just what we can get by with. When we show compassion, it's a lavish kind of compassion. It's more than what they need. And then we don't choose our neighbors. And we don't love them in theory. We don't act one way and say, well, I really love that person. Because look at what Jesus says at the end of this passage. Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. Who was it that was a neighbor? The one who showed mercy. Jesus says, you go and do likewise. Don't go and think about what he did. Don't go and talk about what he did. Don't go and reflect on what he did. Go and do what he did. Take action. For this man, it would have meant, go and if you see a Samaritan in trouble, you show mercy. This was serious business. And so showing mercy for us is serious business. Showing compassion is challenging. And it's not always easy. And sometimes we're going to resist it. And sometimes we're so frustrated with someone, we don't want to show them love. But it's in those moments when we're reminded of our obligation. Our obligation to a God who loved us when we were unloving. A God who loved us when we weren't worthy of it. The God who chose a plan that would allow us to have a loving relationship with Him. And He wants us to extend that love to others. Tonight, if you need to come to the God who loves all of us, all the world. We know His love extends to everyone, but we do know that salvation, a relationship with Him, is conditional on our obedience. We have to obey and submit our will to His. And it may be that that obedience for you needs to happen tonight. If you want to come forward and confess Jesus as Lord and put Him on in baptism, you can begin living that life. Or it may be that there's a situation in your life where you've seen some similarities between this priest and this Levite. You've walked by on the other side and you want to stop walking by and start showing mercy, and you want prayers of your brothers and sisters to help you do that. Whatever your need is, if we can help you, please come as we stand, as we worship together.